Australian cricket took a large step towards what comes next on the weekends when Steve Smith and Dave Warner were back in the fold with the team in the UAE. The Australian side, as it is, has a one-day series against Pakistan to come after the triumph that was India. And Smith and Warner are headed for the IPL where they can push their case. They'll have to play some good cricket too to push their case. They're obviously going to be part of the World Cup squad. But as Ian Healy pointed out on the weekend, it's no formality if they can't get their game in order in the IPL beforehand. As for Warner, Smith and Justin Langer with the public commentary, and a lot of this is to play out on a public front. There's reintegration into the team and then there's reintegration into the fold of Australian cricket, which the public has a large say in as well. This was the word out of the UAE from the three key participants.
Yeah, it's been awesome. You know, it's like we didn't really leave. The boys were very accepting of us coming in and with open arms and a lot of big hugs and cuddles. And no, it's been great. And it's good to see the spirit that they're in after a great series win in India. And obviously been out for 12 months. There's obviously been a big change, which is great. And it's about just accepting that and playing what our role should be in the team moving forward.
Yeah, it's been great. It seems like there's a really good energy around the group at the moment, coming off the back of what was a terrific win in India. The spirits are really high. It's been great to be back around the group. You know, they've been really welcoming again, and it's almost like we never left. I'm really excited about playing again. The elbow's tracking really well. I've been batting for the last 2 weeks and, yeah, able to play all shots and got my power back and stuff. So, you know, I'm just excited to play again.
Yeah, it's great to have him back in the team. It's like two brothers coming back home, you know. Brothers leave home for different reasons in family, so nice to have them back in there. They've been received really well. We had a good night together last night. We've had some great meetings today, so yeah, it's been really positive.
Dave Warner, Steve Smith and Justin Langer on public display after meeting with the team. Robert Craddock, good morning.
Hello, Jared. I thought I was listening to a version of the Osmonds or the Partridge Family. There was magnificent, wasn't it? One big happy family. I love it all.
Yeah, some of the key participants are not there, but they had a nice dinner together, so that's something. What do you make of the overall in it, Crash, as this is sort of a key public step as well as privately?
It is. Look, I'll tell you a story that interests me is everyone talks about reintegration into the team, but what about reintegration with each other, Smith and Warner? I mean, you're talking about two guys who will be eternally linked in history for this dastardly deed. How could they ever be what they were, Jared? And I know they were never close, but I keep hearing that Warner has handled things really stoically. Like he spent his whole life basically in a tumble dryer, bumping off the walls, controversial, and he sort of, you knock him down, he gets up. Whereas the fall for Stephen Smith was so far greater and so much more chastening. I mean, he's gone from this idolised figure to the absolute basement of the game, and I think the hurt is really there. So it's as much as we talk about their integration into the team, that's the relationship between those two gentlemen now thrust back together. And I don't think they had much to do with each other while they were out at all. So that interests me really deeply. I think it's a – and as far as the team's concerned, yeah, I agree with the way you've read it. They will be in the squad. I just feel that – I know a lot will be said about, oh, they've got to fight for their place in the team. Look, if South Africa are in the World Cup final against Australia, they bat first and they make 274, I mean – cloudy skies at Lord's. Who do you want walking out chasing those runs? You know, yep. I mean, whether you like them or whether you don't, if it's not D. Warner and S. Smith, you know, gee, someone's played well in the tournament, or my goodness me, they've gone horrible.
They'll have to hit certain markers, though, wouldn't they, in the IPL? If one of them came out and couldn't make a run, it would be really difficult to thrust them in.
It would be. Given the absolute form surge of, you know, Usman Khawaja, for instance, the IPL's a long tournament. They'll be given every chance, and they'll also have a chance in the nine preliminary games of the World Cup to, you know, there'll be some nice, sweet, soft pickings there as well. So, look, it's not a formality. Look, the team is so interesting. Ian Chappell raised the possibility of the weekend of not taking Aaron Finch and making Tim Payne captain. And, you know, that is at least would have to be discussed by the national selectors. if Finch has five poor games against Pakistan. Look, 250s and he's probably there. But if he keeps getting, you know, it's like early season in England. The ball moves around, you know, mesmerically. I mean, he's having trouble in the UAE. I mean, you know, England is a far more challenging prospect with a new ball. So he is a worry, Aaron Finch. I think he'll probably go, but this plan about Ian Chappell's plan about bringing back Tim Payne. I tell you what, Payne captained the last one day team to England, and he is the sort of guy, because he's a test captain, you can just say, mate, you're running this show as well. And go, because of his temperament, Jared, Tim Payne, go, okay, that's fine.
How disruptive would that be? I do understand the personal view in it, but I did think for Ian Chappell not to countenance just how, I mean, we'd be 2 months out from the World Cup with a whole lot unsettled within the team. I just think that would be, and having Payne was captain and then they chose a different path, it would be so disruptive for the team to do that now.
You think that, Jared? But it's being disrupted anyway. Yeah. It's sort of like when you're redecorating your room and someone says, can we have a new sofa in there? And you say, oh, then you think, you know what? We're doing the paintings anyway and we're moving the bed. Why not do everything together? Like Smith and Warner back in that team is a, you know, that's serious disruption. But in a funny sort of way, the focus will be so much on those two that I actually think the players of the tournament for Australia and indeed the Ashes will be a batsman who's not one of those two. It's some guy who, when he's practicing in the far net with zero cameras on him and there's 20 cameras trained on Smith and Warner, he's thinking, you know what? I'm loving this fresh air. So it is, you couldn't do it with a lot of captains. And the other thing is, Jared, don't be mindful of this point. If Tim Payne replaced Alex Carey as keeper, they don't feel they owe Alex Carey anything. Like, he was sort of course, he was the GWS inaugural captain, and he's always been given things in cricket on a slight mark of potential. He's a very fine player, and he has improved a bit, but he hasn't taken the world by storm. I mean, Darren Berry and Chris Hartley were of similar standard to Alex Carey. They got basically nothing in international cricket, so he's filled it. So they don't feel, oh, how could we possibly, if we put Tim Payne in, we could drop Carey. To win this World Cup, Australia may have to be a little inventive. And my first choice captain right now is Aaron Finch. And I hope he scores runs against Pakistan. But I understand the discussion about Tim Payne. Yep. I mean, you know, everything's on the table. It really is.
The broader Warner-Smith conversation is now around contracts and whether they should return to an Australian contract or whether they should be made to earn it. What are the implications of that? What do you think will happen?
They haven't had the discussion about contracts. Stephen Smith was on about $2.5 million a year as Australia's number one contracted player, and then he got no contract because he was axed. They will get contracts, but they'll be low-level contracts, I think, because the weighting of the contract is officially what you did over the last year, which is zero. That's nothing, so they don't get anything out of that. Plus, what you're likely to do over the next year, well, they're likely to be heavily involved. So I would be surprised. The top five contracts soar above everyone else. So I think you'll be, you know, guys like Pat Cummins, Josh Hazlewood, Mitchell Stark, you know, Tim Payne will probably get the top five. But I'm expecting Warner and Smith to slot in midway in the 20-man contract list. Not one of their bigger contracts, but not bread and dripping.
No.
Not that anyone does, Jared.
No, I'm sure that won't be the case. Hey, Crash, Paul in Coburg's with us on 1300 736 736. Paul, welcome.
How you going, Jared? G'day, Crash.
Good on you, Paul.
Yeah, I enjoy your segment every week, mate. I look forward to it. And, it's really enjoyable. But I just want to say, if I was a selective Australian team, I wouldn't pick Warner. But I just want wondering where two guys sit at the moment for the Ashes. Matthew Wade and Will Posofsky, I think it is.
I'll be really honest with you. I don't think either will go. I don't think Matthew Wade is the favourite child of the Australian selectors, and I think they will not pick him. And Posofsky, he was going to play in the Brisbane Test. He was selected to play against Sri Lanka. But midweek, they just wobbled a bit on it. They were worried he might get concussion again. Now, and they decided to rest him. And then he struggled a bit throughout the test, and I do not believe he will be in the Ashes squad. And I think that's a good thing because, in a funny sort of way, because of Will Pukowski's mental issues, I don't like the thought of him being on the periphery. I think he's the sort of kid you either play or you leave. And that's what confounded me about the treatment of him in Brisbane against Sri Lanka. Like, don't muddle with his head. Don't select him to play and think, actually, no. Like, it's a terrible place, the periphery of international selection. It makes players sweat and fret and all this. And so I reckon he'll get there again, but not this tour.
You were really firm on that before he was brought into the squad in Brisbane, and then that transpired. So it is consistent with the way that you'd measured him up all the way through.
100%, Jared. It's just that you and I, you know, we see these kids who are on the agonised periphery. I mean, Matt Renshaw is struggling to score a run because he can see the Ashes tour looming all season. He's been so it's a torturous place to be. Just let Will Pukowski bake in the oven of Shield cricket, and then when he's ready, go. Bang, you are in, mate. Good luck. You're playing Friday, number four. Go get it. But this sort of, yeah, well, his dad came to Brisbane for the test thinking he was playing. They've done some deceptively good work in the last month, the selectors. They brought back guys like Khawaja and Hanscom, and they've been successful. But I did disagree with that one.
And Matthew Wade, so he made the century last week. The Shield numbers, Harris 943 runs, Wade 922. They've both got one to come in the in the regulars, and then Harris will play the final with Victoria guaranteed to host that. So Wade is on track for 1,000 runs in the Shield season, notwithstanding what he did in the one-day tournament in the BBL as
Great.
Well.
Can't argue with the stats, Jared. And you know, at a time when we're debating who should be the reserve wicketkeeper, but it's a terrifically interesting debate, isn't it? Peter Hanscom, should he go to England or Wade? But I just get this vibe that it won't be Matthew Wade, that they feel that ship has sailed. And that there was more to dropping him in the national team than just pure form. There was something on his last tour of the subcontinent they didn't like about his demeanour. You know, no, there was no crime committed or anything like that, but look, he could easily go to England, but I'm not expecting him to be there.
When we sleep, somewhere in the world, Shane Watson is still making runs.
Yep.
And he's player of the tournament in the Pakistan, the Pakistan Premier League or their Big Bash tournament?
Yep.
He is a phenomenal player, Shane Watson. Mm. And I came to this realisation a little while ago that he was underappreciated, but that he's still going and he's still at the forefront of so many tournaments around the world.
One of the greatest achievements, the most underrated achievement a professional sportsman can do is to play a high-level code for more than half their life. There's a footballer for the West Tigers, Benji Marshall, who I absolutely adore because he's played 17 years of first grade in his 34 years. Watson actually beats that. He's in his 20th year of senior cricket, of the big stuff, and he's 37 years old. So he broke down, and this is for all-rounders often break down, and yet he's still gone the journey. No one broke down more than Watto. He went through these crazy stages where he took his own pillow on tour, his own physiotherapist. He lit beautiful scented candles in his room, which he did, you know, like lilac and lavender and all that. He tried everything to be the best he could. And I've completely come around to your way, Jared, that he's underrated. Look, he averaged 35 as a test batsman. Not bad. And 33 as a bowler. And he's still going in the Pakistan, player of the tournament, batsman of the tournament. And, he just got trapped in that era where Australia was struggling. And he and Michael Clarke were two kids from working-class backgrounds who wanted the same thing, the Australian captaincy. It was only there for one of them. Clarke got it. So it never quite worked for S. Watson. But mind you, what a career. Good.
37 years of age. Mm. And it was the century in the IPL final last year. So he's been involved in a bit of an altercation, or not a bit of an altercation, a proper altercation in the Pakistan Super League final as well. So there's a whole lot that has swirled around him.
Oh, yeah. And look, doesn't take a backward step. I always feel he was underrated because people never really liked his body language. Like poor old Watto, he always gave that impression he's just backed over the family pet in the driveway, didn't he? Like he just, Ricky Ponting said to him once, he said, mate, you've got to keep your shoulders up. He said, if I was playing you, I'd think, I've got you, mate. And he never quite got on top of his body because people saw his paychecks and they said, Watto's earning $2 million a year and he's miserable, you know. But reality did cut through with him. I remember him saying once, his dad, Bob, worked for the, I think it was the RAAF, and he said, my dad never earned more than 40, 50 grand a year, and here's what I'm paid. Have a look at it. He said, how lucky am I? And when he said that, I thought, it's the pennies dropped. Watto gets how lucky he is.
Yeah.
You know?
He was given a ferocious send-off by one of the Pakistan players, Imam Ul Haq, which has been sort of condemned by cricketers around the world, the disrespect in all of that as he was run out cheaply. So, yep, while we sleep, Watto keeps making runs. Crash, we'll continue on a little bit more cricket. Should the Duke's ball be used in all test matches around the world? And the NRL, the first round, has taken place on the weekend and Melbourne Storm laid down quite a marker. More with Crash in a moment. Buy a Hawthorn membership today for your chance to win a 2019 team-signed jumper. Call 1-3000 Hawks. And if you sign up today, there are prizes up for grabs, including 2 family in the Guard of Honour for a chosen home game, 2 signed jumpers, and 1 lucky person who signs up today will be upgraded to a gold adult membership valued at $460. So Hawks fans, get busy today.
So Croft goes into dummy half. Smith at first receiver, flat pass for Nelson, aside for Solomona. Some kind of offload to Munster, and he gets an offload away as well. It's play on, and Jerome Hughes at the Slater stand end in the fullback jumper. The number one has scored the first try of the season. He's filling the big boots of Billy Slater. An early kick from Boyd. Vunivalu saw it coming. He can bat it dead in goal. And the Melbourne Storm fans stand and start to celebrate. Craig Bellamy, his perfect record in round one encounters remains and improves to 16-0.
It was Thursday night in the season opener through the opening round of the NRL. It does serve as one of the markers, Storm 22, Broncos 12. No one was quite sure about the Storm. They were a sort of take-on-faith proposition with Craig Bellamy still at the helm, Crash, but anyone who had any doubts will just, I imagine, pull those back.
Oh, Jared, they get me every year. I expect them to fade. And this could be Craig Bellamy's crowning glory this year because, you know, with their superstars stripped away, Smith near the end of his career, Slater gone, Kronk gone, you know, if he can conjure a premiership in Melbourne with those guys gone, it's extraordinary. That record of winning every first-round game is so significant. They're too well organised. And this extraordinary stat, Jared, that the team which they've been most successful against, the best record they've got, is extraordinarily Brisbane. I mean, it should be the other way around. Brisbane milking all the talent fields in Queensland and should be, you know, they've spent so much money on their home ground at Gilbert Park, their training facility, that it's slanted exactly the same as Suncorp Stadium.
Yeah,
the degree, like, this is outrageous. So, but the Storm just towel them up. They're too organised, they're too disciplined, and I thought they were quite brilliant, actually.
Anything else jump off the page from that opening round?
I think that, the Storm have set the benchmark again. The Roosters, everyone's talking about, they'll win back-to-back premierships before the season started. But even after week one, they lost to the Rabbitohs. We're thinking, do you know what, it's so hard to win back-to-back, just as the case in the AFL. And the old fox, Wayne Bennett, he's gone from the Broncos to South Sydney. Now, Jared, he's arrived there as a 30-year coach, mm-hmm. taking over from a first-year coach, Anthony Seibold. Ego normally would demand that he says, right, I'm the master here, I'll change everything. But he actually said, really shrewdly, you know what, this joint's ticking really nicely. I'm not changing much at all. I'll do a smidge of interior decorating. He's kept the players happy. He's had jokes at training. And they've come out looking terrific, South. So the old fox. And he did a little coach's ploy. Any coach who's listening to this... Greg Inglis was, I reckon, 10 kilograms overweight, the great Greg Inglis.
Yep.
Somehow that found its way into the media, and then he's lost weight. I wonder who leaked it. Have a guess. I don't know, but I have my strong suspicions that it was someone I might have just been talking about.
You learn a little bit over 30 years, don't you?
Oh, you do.
Hey, there was one Chris text through. Did you catch the Super Rugby, the Rebels and the Lions, where the Rebels led 33-5, got run down, and the penalty count in favour of the South African team at home was 20-1?
It was, and it was embarrassing. Honestly, no one is that good, and no one is that bad. You know, there's no doubt that the Rebels were, you know, a little bit shambolic at stages, but at 20-1, I just can't see. Gee, wasn't there a blow-up on social media about it? I mean, their fans were absolutely irate. And I must admit, it just didn't feel right for the game. But it was a major talking point in two nations, 100%.
20-1 penalty count, it boggles the mind.
No team is good enough to have one, and no team should be bad enough to have a penalty every 4 minutes. Not in rugby.
The future of the Duke's ball and the recommendation to consider using it in all test matches once we get to the Test Championship, which is about to begin after the news headlines.
Harley Heaven, stop dreaming and start riding.
ECN News this hour, the man accused of the Christchurch terrorist attack has sacked his legal team, opting to instead represent himself. The Victorian Police Minister says Senator Fraser Anning could face charges after he punched a 17-year-old boy who egged him at a rally over the weekend. Snowtown serial killer Robert Joe Wagner has told an Adelaide court his mental well-being would improve if a date for his release was set. He's currently serving 10 life sentences for the bodies in the Barrels killing spree. And the Australian Council of Social Services has joined the fight to increase the minimum wage. SEN.com.au Sport coming up.
Not all traffic is bad, especially web traffic. To boost yours, Google Supple. That's SUPPLE.
Hawks coach Alistair Clarkson says the AFL coaches are still looking for clarity over the new rules relating to the runners, despite the season being just days away. And Dominic Thiem has broken back to take the second set against Roger Federer in the Indian Wells final. It's now 1-1 heading into the third. Weather coming up.
Receding hairline. Google DHI Australia now.
Alfresco Blinds Co. Quality that blocks out the rest.
Sunny today, a top of 28 degrees. Partly cloudy tomorrow, 26. And similar conditions on the way for Wednesday. Right now, it's 23 degrees.
Thanks, Meredith. Neroli Meadows coming up shortly. She's going to be one of the co-hosts in the Footy Show when it returns to our screens later this week. And it is Hawthorn Membership Day on SEN. Call 1-3000-HAWKS and join the mighty fighting today. We'll finish up with Crashy by coming back to cricket. Now, Crash, it's a recommendation rather than a thought bubble that test matches be played with the Duke's ball, which is slightly curious because there are multiple versions of the Duke's ball, but for it to be favoured ahead of the Kookaburra and the SG once the Test Championship begins, so everything across a number of years gets stitched together. What chance this? What do you think of the idea?
I felt it was unnecessary. I don't mind different balls for different conditions, so I didn't think there had to be a global ball. But if there is a global ball, I'm glad it's the Dukes, because it's just worried me in 50-over and 20-over cricket, it's all batsmen, you know. Those games are put on for fours and sixes, and the Kookaburra does its job in that sort of environment. But I like the way that the Duke's ball brings the game back towards the bowler. It's a lot of voices have said that to me. It stays harder for longer and it swings nicely. I just enjoy the contest. So, as you say, there are multiple Duke's balls. The Duke's ball in Australia is probably harder than the one in England. But it is a good ball. And judges like, you know, Shane Warne's been saying it without any agenda whatsoever. He just thinks it's a better ball. Even batsmen like Stuart Law used to say he loved their hard early, the Duke's ball. They come off your bat like a rock. He used to love that feel, you know. So And Kumar Sangakkara, I know he said in Canberra the other day that he said he's a supporter of it. So Ed Cowan and big voices are. So it will enhance Test cricket, I do believe, but I don't believe it's essential. I didn't mind the idea of different balls and different conditions because do you have a standard wicket around the world? Yeah, no, you don't. That's cricket. It's a conditional game.
What would it do to Kookaburra?
Well, it would really give them, they would become more of a white ball manufacturer and a domestic ball manufacturer. But they've been with Australian cricket forever, haven't they?
Yeah.
And the Kookaburra ball has haunted overseas teams that come to Australia. No one, I reckon, the embodiment of it was Nasser Hussain, the English captain, who, when he won the toss at the Gabba once and bowled in Australia, I think made, 3 for 300 at stumps or something like that. He was just terrified of the lack of bite of the Kookaburra ball once it got old. Michael Vaughan says Australia is much closer to winning in England than England is in Australia, and the Kookaburra ball is all to do with that. They just find it so hard to get wickets with. And we shouldn't be ashamed to say we think the Duke's ball is better. I mean, let's just, you know, it's not being un-Australian to say it. It's just being a cricket fan, looking for what you want in a ball. I like a nice, even contest.
Crash, great to catch up on a Monday as ever.
Have a great AFL season, Gerald. I can't wait. And by now you should be hearing the thundering footprints of the Brisbane Lions.
We'll see. We'll pop them with you. Good on you.
See you, mate. Bye.
Robert Craddock on a Monday here on Waitley. Coming up, Neroli Meadows will be with me as she is going to become one of the co-pilots of the Footy Show. It's Hawthorn Membership Day on SEN. Call 1-3000 Hawks and join the mighty fighting today. This is Waitley for Red Energy, born and bred in Melbourne. That's Red Energy. And always ahead, the new BMW 3 Series has arrived at Doncaster BMW.